It's the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Shereen Seward, in for Kate Archer-Kent. Lawmakers in Wisconsin have been working for years to address the state's water issues, from groundwater pollution to contaminated wells. Last week, Governor Tony Evers announced a $10 million program funded through federal COVID-19 relief under the American Rescue Plan Act to help private well owners struggling with groundwater contamination. It's part of efforts to improve access to clean water. Lawmakers say the funding based on the state's well compensation grant program could impact more than 1,000 additional wells statewide. So how does the program work and who will qualify? Join in this discussion, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Katrina Shankland is a Democratic State Assembly lawmaker representing the 71st District in Stevens Point. Katrina, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Todd Novak is a Republican State Assembly lawmaker representing the 51st District in Dodgeville. Todd, welcome back to the Ideas Network as well.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Governor Tony Evers this week announced this plan using $10 million in federal COVID pandemic relief funding for a grant program that would clean up contaminated drinking wells. So how much could that amount of money address this issue? Katrina, how big a deal is this?
This is a massive deal to have $10 million to support people across rural Wisconsin, including small business owners like our daycare centers, our rural restaurants, and other small businesses, and even churches. Is really significant, and it's going to be transformational for the people who haven't been able to drink water from their taps. This has been my eighth attempt, including four different bills and multiple budget motions and proposals since 2017. It's something the Water Quality Task Force tried to address, but was unable to be successful. And to have the governor listen and take action because we couldn't afford to wait any longer is really significant to the people of Wisconsin, who will be able to have up to $16,000 of their cost to remediate their water or replace their well in their pockets to help with that at a time when many people are struggling. So I really appreciate the leadership of the governor and was glad to stand with him to announce this new grant.
Todd, the governor has authority over spending the federal pandemic relief funds. Does the legislature as a whole approve of using the money this way?
You know, I haven't talked to any colleagues of my side of the aisle. I totally do. I agree with Katrina. We've been talking about this for a long time. Katrina and I have worked together on water for 2-3 years now, and this has been a priority of ours. And while we were able to get some money to increase the well compensation grant program in the state budget, it wasn't enough. So I think this is a good shot in the arm and gives us a springboard to start the next session off with.
Katrina, tell me how this works. How do people apply for the funding? Has that been ironed out yet?
Absolutely. So at this point, everyone should know that the program will launch October 3rd. And in the meantime, what you can do is you can go on the DNR's website and subscribe under ARPA Well Grant to get email notifications and updates about the program application. I think the DNR will be issuing awards on a continuous basis until all that funding is expended. So people should be prepared to apply in October. One of the things that's important to know about is if you've had a test in the past 2 years that has tested, for example, for nitrate above 10 parts per million, that way you can use one of those tests from the last couple years and then get another test as well. And so I think that's going to help a lot of people knowing that they should be prepared to get a well sample from a qualified and licensed lab. And secondly, I think people should be ready to attend a webinar if they have any questions. It sounds like the DNR is going to be hosting one in the coming weeks to provide more information for people about the new program.
Todd, I'm curious, is this for property owners only, or is there any help for, say, a renter in a rural area? What should a renter do?
Well, I believe the renter should talk to their landlord because, I would be with the property owner. So they should work together in unison. But, $10 million sounds like a lot of money, but in reality, it is a lot of money. And when you're talking replacing wells and issues like that, it isn't. So that's why I urge anybody that has an issue to apply for the funding right away, because I have a feeling it's probably going to run out and probably pretty quick. So I think it's very important that people that have a problem with their wells, contamination or whatever, jump on this right away.
We're talking about water quality in the state with Assembly Representatives Todd Novak and Katrina Shanklin. Katrina, Wisconsin in April established a commercial nitrogen optimization pilot program. What are the results of that so far?
Absolutely. So that was part of a bill that Representative Novak and I worked on together with other members of the task force. And we were really excited about this because we wrote this bill along with Representative Trano, who's a farmer, to really help people who want to do the right thing and reduce the nitrogen loading on the front end of things in order to prevent nitrogen leaching and water contamination on the back end of things. And so what this new pilot program will do is it will provide farmers up to $50,000 over two growing seasons, as long as they work with a UW system researcher to manage their nitrogen loading. So in this case, it would be commercial fertilizer, and work with them to maximize water quality and their yield. So instead of just focusing on the agronomics, it's balancing that with water quality. And so the reason why we call it optimization is we want to find the right formula that keeps farmers in business, staying strong, passing their farm to the next generation, and feeding Wisconsin and the country and the world, while also making sure everyone can drink their groundwater. And it's important to note that many, many people in Wisconsin get their well water from groundwater. So we're trying to tackle this problem at the source. So we just talked about the well grant program. That's really remediation. Now we're looking at prevention. And so this $50,000 grant for farmers, I believe, will also be transformational in changing practices, managing nitrogen loading, and protecting water quality all in one go.
Todd, you've said that water quality referendums are a good idea because they keep the issue in voters' minds. What's the importance of keeping the public interested in water quality and keeping their minds on this issue?
No, I think it's a very important, especially to not only Representative Shanklin and I, but other legislators in the state. They need to hear from their constituents. You know, Representative Shanklin and I are leaders on this issue, but, you know, there's 98 other assembly members and 33 Senate members that we have to work with. So I think by putting water referendums on the ballot in November, and so, like some counties are doing, I think it's great, because I know what's going to happen. They're going to pass by 70 or 80%. Everybody wants clean water. I think that's, and it's not a Democrat or Republican issue, it's a state of Wisconsin issue. We worked very hard on the task force together. You know, we had some big bills come through the assembly that we passed and sent to the Senate. Unfortunately, COVID hit. We were able to do a lot last session, but we need to keep it going. You know, Katrina and I said from the start, this is just the start, and we plan on doing more and more every session. And so I think it's important to hear from the legislators, hear from the people back home, their voters, that they support clean water.
Katrina, what do you think about that? The referendums that some counties around the state are asking voters, they're asking them straight out, should there be a state right to clean water? What's your view on that?
I completely agree. And Todd's right. The majority of voters in counties, both purple, red, and blue, have all voted to support these referenda because they know water. Everyone should be able to drink water from their taps. We should all have access to clean drinking water. I think Representative Novak and I are proof that Democrats and Republicans can work together on water quality to get results. And our voters in our communities and voters in central Wisconsin and across the state are voting overwhelmingly to say we should be working together to protect our water.
Katrina Shankland is a Democratic State Assembly lawmaker. She represents the 71st District in Stevens Point. Todd Novak is a Republican State Assembly lawmaker representing the 51st District in Dodgeville. This is the State Capitol Report. Join in 800-642-1234. I'm Shereen Seward. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Shereen Seward. A $10 million grant program announced last week by Governor Tony Evers will help residents struggling with groundwater contamination improve access to clean drinking water. Lawmakers say the program will make funding more accessible by expanding eligibility requirements and lowering contamination limits. Join in with your clean water concerns and whether you think this program goes far enough to address the issue. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Todd Novak and Katrina Shanklin, both members of the Speaker's Task Force on Water Quality, stay with us. The State Department of Natural Resources is setting water quality standards for so-called forever chemicals. They've set that at 70 parts per trillion in drinking water. It's the same as a 2016 federal recommendation. Katrina, is that a good enough standard?
So I think it's important to recognize that originally they were proposing 20 parts per trillion and combined for PFOA and PFOS. And many different groups across the state who are facing groundwater, surface water, and other contamination due to PFAS exposure, including of the soils, were concerned about 70. I think they were willing to take that over nothing, absolutely. But I also think the research that has come out since then from the EPA, which shows the maximum exposure should be well below 70, means that I think eventually there will be a federal standard that is much lower than that. So I'm willing to take this 70 over nothing, but I was disappointed in the NRB vote that they failed to pass groundwater standards at all. And then they did significantly weaken the proposed drinking water standard from 70 down to 20. So that's why I've been a co-author of the CLEAR Act for several sessions, since that would put us to the point where both DNR and DHS, our state agencies, have recommended the public protection and public health standard be at a 20 parts combined for PFOA and PFOS.
The Department of Natural Resources lists dozens of sites around the state that are contaminated with PFAS. And last session, lawmakers passed a bill banning the use of PFAS-containing firefighting foams. So one step there. Todd, where should lawmakers go next on this issue? It's something people are really talking about statewide.
Well, I think once we start getting more testing done at municipal plants and such, we're going to have a better idea of how far and how much this PFAS is contaminated is in our water. You know, you need to remember you brought up firefighting foam, which is a leader in contamination. However, you know, PFAS is in, like, I can't remember how many hundreds of items. You know, you're talking Teflon, water repellent clothing, some form of that chemical is in everything. It's in our daily lives. So I'm not sure, we need to find out where it's all at first and go from there. I would just say I agree with Representative Shanklin, though. We need to have a standard. And I think the federal government needs to lead on this. Every state is different. We dug into this. It's like, one state has a certain standard, another state has a different standard. It's important that the federal government take the lead instead of, 50 states having 50 different standards.
And Katrina, when do you think that the federal government will come down with that standard? We've heard things from maybe October, maybe not until next spring. Do you have a sense of when that federal standard might come down?
Well, I think it takes a while to do administrative rulemaking, and that's why I believe, at the earliest, it would be at least a year to several years from now. And I think knowing that there are always folks who say, let's wait for this and wait for that, knowing that there may be court challenges, since that seems to be the modus operandi for a lot of folks as it relates to health standards, I feel that the state needs to take action. Other states like Michigan have, and I think at the end of the day, people deserve to be able to drink their water from their tap, regardless of contaminant, whether it's lead, PFAS, bacteria, nitrate. And so I do think that the legislature could pass the CLEAR Act. I would say, at the end of the day, we have to look at the fact that states have rights to do so, and we can do so too.
We're talking about water quality in the state with Assembly Representatives Todd Novak and Katrina Shanklin. Todd, you led the Bipartisan Speaker's Task Force on Water Quality. The task force in 2020 produced more than a dozen bills with the goal of promoting clean water in the state. Did the task force achieve those goals?
We did last year. You know, the initial task force, the bills we put out, of course, like as I said before, failed in the Senate. But we're plugging away. Last session, we were able to get some of the ideas and bills that we originally proposed out. I think, Katrina, you mentioned the nitrogen pilot program, you know, a state hydrologist position, freshwater collaborative, Wisconsin with the university system is great. You know, we also increased county conservation staff in the state. I mean, it's things like that. So we did bring some back from the task force, and that's the plan this session too. I know Katrina and I are already talking about things we want to do. You know, we originally started the task force. Representative Tranel and I requested it and to have a blueprint. When Katrina and I first met for the first time, decide how we were going to do this, we wanted to set a blueprint to build off of, and it's going to take some time to do that. And we want to keep going at it, and hopefully we'll have a blueprint that when Katrina and I are both gone out of the assembly that somebody else can build on, because this just can't be. I think the important thing is we just can't keep doing this every 2 years. I can't keep going to the putting budget motions in the budget every 2 years to try to do this and do that. We need some solid funding sources, and we need some permanent fixes.
Katrina, what are some of the things that were on your wish list as a task force that perhaps did not see the light of day?
I think the biggest thing is reforming the state's well compensation grant program. So while the $10 million from the DNR and Governor Evers are a fantastic start, I think it's important to recognize that that is a supplemental new grant program, and that the state still has an antiquated program with outdated and stringent requirements, like having to own livestock that drink at least 3 months from a contaminated well. And so the money that was added in the last budget to that program hasn't been and cannot be spent for nitrate, because virtually no one qualifies. In fact, the last time someone qualified for it for nitrate was in 2019. So we have several new million dollars sitting in a pot waiting to be spent. That's not being fiscally conservative if we can't spend it, but we decided to allocate it, right? So let's open that up. We need to change that law. Again, I've worked on this at least through four different bills over the last 6 years, seven different tries through multiple budgets as well. So let's get that done. Let's open up that program to as many people as possible. And then secondly, I think what we really need to do is ensure, as Representative Novak said, and I completely agree, that we have a long-term funding strategy. So let's take a look at Ohio. Ohio passed what was called H2 Ohio a few sessions ago, and they worked together across the aisle to pass bipartisan support for a long-term funding solution for their water, including their surface water. Both Representative Novak and I have introduced legislation to establish a state clean water fund, and that's really where I believe we need to head. Putting forward bills piecemeal can support a short-term strategy, and Representative Novak and I have done a good job of that. We've gotten $5 per acre cover crop insurance, a state hydrologist position, delaying the Wisconsin funds sunset, adding producer-led watershed grant funding and county conservationist funding and the freshwater collaborative. But at the end of the day, it's going to take more leadership than just two legislators who care about water. We need the whole legislature to recognize together that everyone in Wisconsin needs clean drinking water, and we need to fund it. We need to put our money where our mouths are and establish a clean water fund. So I would challenge my colleagues on both sides of the aisle to work with us on that. I would love to see another water task force come back next session so we can continue working. But I do want people to know that I think overall the water quality task force was a success. The majority of the bills that we introduced in the 2019-2020 session have been passed and signed into law. And the few remaining, we will continue to work on together, including well testing, well compensation, and more.
Todd, we have about 30 seconds left in our time together. What should the legislature's next steps be on water quality?
Well, like Katrina just said, she listed off a whole list of things that we've done, accomplished, and we need to go from there. I think we will start, we'll go back to the report. We'll see what we haven't done. We'll rebuild on those. And also, I think that what I really want to do, I agree, I would love to bring back the task force. We had a great group to work with, and it was a bipartisan group. And kind of use that as a basis, work with the DNR, the university system like we did before, the agencies that were involved, and just sit down and see what's our priorities.
That sounds great, Todd. I thank you so much for your thoughts today. Thank you for joining us. Appreciate that. And Katrina, thank you so much for being here as well.
Thank you for having us. We appreciate it.
Katrina Shankland is a Democratic State Assembly lawmaker representing the 71st District in Stevens Point. Todd Novak is a Republican State Assembly lawmaker representing the 51st District in Dodgeville. Ahead on the State Capitol Report, we talk with local government officials about local referenda, asking if Wisconsin's 1849 near total ban on abortion should be overturned. Join in 800-642-1234. I'm Shereen Seward. News Update is next on the Ideas Network. It's the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Shereen Seward in for Kate Archer-Kent. When the U.S. Supreme Court overturned the landmark Roe v. Wade decision on abortion, Wisconsin's 1849 statute that criminalized abortion went back into effect. Since the June decision, advocates have been working to influence the future of state abortion laws, as the statute now in effect makes it illegal to perform an abortion after conception, except when necessary to preserve the life of the mother. Some, but not all, Wisconsin voters will have a chance to offer their views this fall, as several cities are putting the question to an advisory referendum. Should voters have a voice in this issue? And will a non-binding referendum affect lawmakers' decisions? Join in this discussion. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Monica Cruz is the La Crosse County Board Chair. Monica, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Natalia Taft is a Racine County City Council member. Natalia, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Natalia, how are you feeling after the U.S. Supreme Court ended constitutional protections for abortion?
You know, I just, like many people I've been talking to in my community, I feel, you know, not that it was a surprise, but I feel shocked and I feel really violated to have my reproductive freedoms taken away in one fell swoop.
You organized a rally in Racine. What was that like for you?
Well, I have organized some rallies and things like that in the past, and this one was different because of how much energy folks had, a lot of new people, a lot of younger folks coming to this rally. Really, people wanted to do something. People really wanted to be heard, have their voices heard, and really be with other people who are mourning this huge loss.
Monica, what is your reaction to the Supreme Court ruling? How are you feeling about it?
Well, I was outraged, obviously. I didn't think it would ever happen. And when the decision was leaked, I thought maybe the public pressure would change the minds of the Supreme Court justices. Obviously, that didn't happen. And I just never thought that would happen in my lifetime.
Natalia, last week, the Racine City Council approved an abortion referendum for the November election. It's going to ask voters to offer their views on the state's 1849 abortion ban. You proposed the idea. Why and what do you hope to accomplish with it?
Yeah, that's a great question. It is a non-binding advisory referendum, but the thing is, in the state of Wisconsin, that's really the only way that citizens have to get their voices heard. Right now, any non-binding or binding resolutions to get on the ballot statewide have to be approved by the state legislature. And so in our situation, with our state legislature so gerrymandered, there isn't really any other way for people to have their voices heard except by community. And I heard loud and clear from my community that they wanted to have a voice on this issue. And so I did my best to make that happen.
Do you think other Wisconsin cities should approve this type of referendum? Should we see this in other cities and counties throughout the state?
Absolutely. I think so, because this is we know that the majority of Wisconsinites, just like the majority of Americans, support reproductive freedoms. And in a state like Wisconsin, where we're letting a ban from 1849 determine the citizens' rights now, absolutely, we need to have a voice. The citizens in Wisconsin now need to have a voice. So I think that this is only going to gain momentum. I don't think this issue is going away. And I think people are really clamoring for to have any way to have their voices heard. And if the legislature won't do it, then communities are going to have to take it on themselves, just like we did. And it passed unanimously through city council to put the question to the voters. So I think that's really important.
We're talking about Wisconsin's 1849 abortion ban, as some Wisconsin cities are debating whether or not to have an advisory referendum on the fall ballot. Our guests are Monica Cruz and Natalia Taft. Monica is the La Crosse County Board Chair. Natalia is a Racine City Council member. Monica, last week, a proposed abortion referendum was narrowly defeated in La Crosse. You did not have the success in La Crosse that they did in Racine in getting this on the ballot. The final vote was tied 15-15. You introduced the proposal. Were you surprised by the vote?
I was not surprised. I was dismayed. I was expecting it to be a tight vote. We have a divided county board with some people that I knew would never vote for this. But I had high hopes that the argument could be made that voters need to be heard on this. Our state legislature has not moved on any important issues to more liberal people. And so I don't have much hope that they will do this unless there's some, you know, real pressure from voters. So I'm thinking, you know, advisory referenda are one way to get the word to the legislature. But it didn't happen in our county, unfortunately. I'm very hopeful and very supportive, you know, that this happens in other municipalities and counties across the state.
Monica, what kinds of conversations surrounding abortion rights were happening? That was it an intense debate? Did you hear some passionate views on both sides? What happened?
Very intense debate, very long debate. We had other advisory referenda on the agenda as well, and it was a very long meeting. I think the main argument was that supervisors didn't think that that was something that should be done at the county level. They didn't feel that it was within our purview to advise the legislature, which I thought was kind of ludicrous, but that argument did carry a lot of weight. It was reiterated often. There were some people, obviously, that were pro-life and had really, really listened to all the emails that we got from a very organized anti-abortion pro-life group. We had hundreds of emails, and I think some of our supervisor were really swayed by that. I think, you know, there were a number of different arguments. It was going to cost us $5,000 to put it on the ballot, and some people argued about that, you know, that was money that could be better used. The arguments kind of ranged, but there was enough discussion to sway some people who I thought initially might have voted for the advisor referendum, and, you know, it caused them to switch their votes.
We have Andrew on the phone from Whitewater. Andrew, hi.
Hi there. I just have a quick question for the general audience and for the two guests that you have on. Do we as a society feel comfortable putting up for a democratic vote whether or not it's okay to end the life of somebody else as is being proposed? And if that's the case, would society have any regrets or reservations about if that were to be turned on other groups of people within society?
So, Andrew, you're asking whether or not it's appropriate to have a referendum about this issue, yes?
Well, I'm saying, is it okay to democratically have an election of any sort where we're deciding whether or not it's okay to end somebody else's life as is being proposed? That's what I'm asking.
Okay. Thank you, Andrew. Natalia, what do you say to Andrew's question?
So I think reproductive freedom is a fundamental human right. I think it's really a decision that needs to be made by any person who can become pregnant, with their families, with their doctors. There are a lot of complicated issues regarding this particular question. So I think it's a fundamental human right that should be protected across the country. That is my only pause about having votes on a state to state or municipality level, is that I think that this is something that should be protected across the country.
And Monica, we were talking earlier about some of the comments that came up during the discussion, and one was on the cost. And I guess, why hold a referendum that costs tax dollars when polls have long gauged public opinion on abortion nationally and in the state? What's the benefit?
Well, I think $5,000 is not an outrageous cost. And even if the cost were higher, it's important to find out what voters want. It's important to provide a voice to our constituents so they can communicate with their legislators in a meaningful way. Of course, they could write a letter, but that doesn't have the collective impact that a referendum would have. And to me, abortion is the civil rights issue of our time right now. I think, you know, women having bodily autonomy is a question that, you know, was not, in the public eye for 50 years, and now suddenly it is again. And, to assume that you can tell, 50% of the population what they can do with their bodies is just preposterous, as far as I'm concerned.
And Monica, at last week's city council meeting, members also struck down an advisory referendum on marijuana. There was quite a debate on this. What was the debate like?
The debate was, do we have, any kind of clout or any kind of impact by having an advisory referendum? We had one in 2018. It passed overwhelmingly. 63, I think, percent of voters indicated that they were in favor of legalization of marijuana. And people were arguing, well, we did that and it didn't have much impact. The legislature doesn't listen. We don't have any kind of clout, so why should we do it again? It's another $5,000. So that the debate kind of went that way. We didn't really debate the merits of marijuana so much as just the mechanics of having another referendum.
We have City Representatives Natalia Taft and Monica Cruz. And Natalia is a member of the Racine City Council. Monica is board chair of La Crosse County. This is the State Capitol Report. Join in, 800-642-1234. I'm Shereen Seward. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Shereen Seward. Wisconsin's 1849 abortion ban is now in effect. Some communities are including a non-binding referendum on the ballot in November, allowing some voters to weigh in on whether the state's abortion statute should be repealed. It's one of a range of issues communities are grappling with, from a lack of affordable housing to increases in homelessness and other serious topics. What do you wish more state lawmakers understood about the issues facing your community? Join in, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Natalia Taft and Monica Cruz stay with us. Natalia is a member of the Racine County City Council. Monica is board chair of La Crosse County. Last week on The Morning Show, we spoke with Brian Sampson, who is La Crosse's first ever homeless coordinator. He said homelessness is a crisis in the region. Here he is talking about the need for long-term support.
How can we support them in being successful in the long term? Because that's really what it's about, is not just finding housing, but then once you're in housing, whatever support and services that person may need, how can we set them up with that?
Natalia, how could state lawmakers strengthen supportive services for the homeless in your community?
Oh, absolutely. Well, we know that we have shared revenue from the state that in our city that stayed flat for a very long time. And so really with the legislature sort of sitting on this huge surplus right now, they need to be able to recognize that in order for cities and counties to invest in our communities, including dealing with helping issues with folks who are homeless with and a myriad of other issues, they need to increase that shared revenue and let the cities do what they need to do to help make sure there's programming and support for all of its citizens. So that's a good first step.
Sure. Monica, what do you think state lawmakers could do to strengthen supportive services for the homeless in your community as well?
Well, obviously, as Brian was pointing out, it is a huge problem in La Crosse County. And I think it's time that municipalities teamed up with the state to address the problem. I think up until now, communities were pretty much left to deal with the problem on their own. It, you know, those were local problems that had to be dealt with at the local level. And I think we've come to realize that it takes a much broader effort and a much more coordinated effort. And if we could get state monies as well as federal monies to come and support what we're investing here ourselves, I think that would be very helpful. So in La Crosse County, for example, right now we are devoting ARPA money to solving the homeless problem. But we could have a much greater impact if we could combine that with some other monies at different levels.
The price of housing has really increased, not just in your individual communities, but really we're hearing about this nationwide. Wisconsin has the highest percentage of lower income renters who are paying more than 50% of their income in the northern Midwest region. This is according to data from the Wisconsin Realtors Association. I guess, you know, Natalia, I'll ask you, how could state policymakers help communities improve housing affordability for you?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. One of the things that we've been doing in Racine lately is we've been doing a lot of public-private partnerships where we have some mix of affordable housing and market rate housing. We've been working with a developer, Jake Jeffers, and we've been doing some really innovative repurposing of some of our historic buildings. So, for example, we have the old Malted Milk campus and beautiful, beautiful buildings that were falling into disrepair. And so what we've been able to do in partnership with getting grants from other places is, and this private entity, we've been able to develop some fantastic market rate and affordable housing units in that area. And that's exactly what the city of Racine needs. We need more housing. We need more affordable housing. We need more market rate housing. We need more housing in general. So these partnerships have been great for us. And we have a wonderful staff who's done an amazing job at finding all sorts of grants and programs to help.
We're talking with two Wisconsin City representatives about local issues and what state lawmakers should know. We have La Crosse County Board Chair Monica Cruz. Also with us is Racine City Council Member Natalia Taft. Let's go to the phone with Mike from New London. Mike, hi.
Hi, I realize my comment is slightly late. It was about your last topic, and it was about the validity of spending $5,000 on the referendum about abortion. And I thought the same people that probably think $5,000 is too much to spend on that to see what people really think are the same ones that spent $1 million paying an ex-Wisconsin Supreme Court justice to investigate a fair election, which obviously just the investigation just ended. But anyway, I'll take any comments off the air, and sorry I was a little late with the comment.
Oh, thank you so much, Mike. Natalia, what do you think about what Mike said?
I really think that the majority, we know that the majority of Americans by far support access to abortion in all or most cases. So we saw this in Deep Red Kansas. Voters overwhelmingly rejected efforts to take away their fundamental rights. And what I'm really concerned about is that these arguments against process, not content, are really, you know, if you know you can't win on the merits, you go for process, right? And so I think we're going to see more and more of these arguments that are keeping people from having their voices heard. We saw it with FAIR Maps. We saw it in the Racine County with a referendum about water. clean water. I mean, we need to let folks have their voices heard, especially in this environment where the legislature is so gerrymandered that their biggest fear is a primary from the right. And so they're going to be giving their base certain, you know, ever more extreme policies, and the rest of us have no way to be heard. So I completely agree that $5,000 is a small price to pay to have the voters' voices heard.
And we have Nancy on the phone from Milwaukee. Nancy, hello.
Hello. Let me begin by telling you that I am not anti-abortion, but this is what I have come to, I think, quite well understand. I have been amazed at the absolute fury with which millions of women have come out against the closing of abortion clinics. But I think that when I hear you use the phrase reproductive rights, what you're really saying is you want women to have the reproductive right not to take any responsibility about birth control so they don't need an abortion. There are so many availabilities of birth controls of various kinds, and it may take a while for people to settle into one that they're comfortable with. But I think, as I said, that to a large extent, people who are so up in arms about this are simply saying, I want the reproductive right not to have to think about birth control, but women. I am a 90-year-old woman myself. Women, we're the ones with the ovaries, we're the ones with the fallopian tubes, and we're the ones with the uteri. We are the ones who are getting pregnant, not men. Therefore, we have to take some control over our own methods of birth control, find out all the different kinds, settle on one. I'm not anti-abortion. I want you to understand that. But your use of that phrase, reproductive rights, is telling me that you don't want the inconvenience of anything to do with birth control.
Okay.
You want that.
Okay, what do you say about that? You know, she's objecting to the term reproductive rights. Monica, what do you say to that?
Well, I agree in some aspects with the previous speaker that birth control is the important issue in this debate. We should make birth control available broadly, and we should talk about it, and we should demystify it. But I don't think anybody chooses abortion as birth control. I don't think anybody says, no, I don't want to bother with taking birth control pills. I'll just wait. And if I get pregnant, I'll have an abortion. I just don't think that happens. It's so much more invasive. It's so much more difficult. I think abortion is a last resort for most women. And I think it's important that it's available. Like the previous speaker says, she's not anti-abortion, and I'm not anti-abortion. I have three granddaughters. I hope that they will have available ways of protecting themselves against unwanted pregnancies. And
sure.
I would say birth control is the first resort.
Monica, I want to thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
And Natalia, thanks for joining us as well. Monica,
thanks for having us.
You bet. Monica Cruz, the La Crosse City County Board Chair. Natalia Taft, City Council Member. Just ahead, we speak with a professor at Notre Dame to learn more about product recalls. Then we examine the legacy of the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Shereen Seward. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.